Welcome back, ArtPod listener. I'm Kate Wells, and this is your regular roundup of the Michigan artists and thinkers we want you to know about. Now, you have probably noticed ArtPod has been on a brief hiatus, but we are back to our regular schedule. And to make it up to you, this is a super-sized edition of ArtPod, and we are going all over the state today. We're going to go to Dearborn for the Arab American Film Festival, talk with them about how they handle movies, about the politics of the Syrian uprising. And of course, what would public radio be without folk rock bands with hipster glasses and long shaggy hair? We're going to check in with a band called Frontier Ruckus. These guys are pretty much fresh out of college, and they are a group that is openly celebrating their bromance and writing songs that they say are love letters to growing up in suburban Michigan. But first, to kick it off, we're going to go to Detroit, specifically a shelter that's just for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered teens. Needless to say, this is a group that gets kicked out of their own homes sometimes. They're unsafe at school, but they are making their own families in this shelter. Michigan Radio's Kyle Norris explains.
Loud beats are blasting through the speakers at the Ruth Ellis Center. It feels like a dance club, but it's the middle of the day. And this is actually a drop-in center for LGBTQ homeless and at-risk youth. About 20 to 30 young people flip, dip, and catwalk in a dance style that's known as Vogue. For a quick reference, think of Madonna's Vogue video from 1990. Here's 21-year-old dancer Donnie Dawson. He's giving us a baby simple version of a basic Vogue dance move. He says, pretend you're holding a basketball and mime with your hands the circular shape of the ball.
And if you feel like you're Jordan and you want to do some extra with the ball, you can start with one hand and you could make a ball with one hand. It's all about your wrist and your imagination. You just have to make sure.
And the dancers here are wild with imagination. They put their personal stamp on a dance form that is acrobatic, sexual, and often very feminine in its movements. They are also fashion forward. One young man wears hot pink tights, red short shorts, pink socks, and a tie-dye t-shirt. While the dancer in the shades, in the middle of the day, inside, is Matthew Dawson. He says voguing is a powerful and personal way for him to express himself.
One of the emotions that I say I put into my Vogue would maybe be anger. I feel like I put it into Vogue so I won't have to put it into other things that are not very constructive. You understand what I mean by that? Some sadness. I wouldn't say sadness as in I'm sad all the time, but some emotions that you don't want to express in front of everybody.
He says as an LGBT young person, if he danced like this in the outside world or on the streets, he would not be safe. And Vogue dancers find safety in their dance community. Vogue was created by gay folks in New York City in the 60s and 70s, mostly by poor and working class black and Latino men. They would compete in the ballroom scene for money and fame and respect in events called balls. And in the scene, people form houses. It's kind of like a team. And a house has an entire roster that includes a mother and a father and children and so on. Here's an excerpt from a documentary about the history of Vogue called Paris is Burning. This dancer is giving the definition of a house.
They're families. You can say that. They're families for a lot of children who don't have families. But this is a new meaning of family.
And it's not uncommon for some of the young people who come to the Ruth Ellis Center to have been kicked out or disowned by their birth families. In fact, 40% of homeless youth in this country identify as gay. So the houses these young people form in the dance world become a kind of family and a form of emotional and physical protection, as dancer Donnie Dawson explains.
When that relationship is really close and really tight, it turns into a family to where it extends far beyond any ballroom. It's all down to if I'm stranded somewhere and I need some help, I can call you and you'll be there.
Dawson is part of a house that's become a family. His gay mother is LaKyra Dawson. She's a transgender woman, so born male but now identifies and presents as a woman. And since her last name is Dawson, her gay family members have taken that last name as their own. Donnie and LaKyra met several years ago at a ball, and they had an instant connection. In fact, LaKyra turned to Donnie and she said,
I kind of just was like, you know, you're my son.
They dance together and hang out, and they spend holidays together. And Lakaira has given Donnie lots of life guidance. She's a big advocate for staying in school and getting a job, in part because she dropped out of high school. She ran away from home at age 13 and then spent 10 years on and off the streets.
That's a lot of things to know and see and do and experience. So I just take from that. Like you said, my mistakes, I use that as, you know, the rule book. Like, don't do this, stay away from that.
She says no one looked out for her when she was younger, so now she wants to steer her kids in the right direction and help them avoid things like prostitution, drug use, or contracting HIV. So Lakaira has pushed Donnie to pursue his education, which he's now doing at Wayne County Community College, where he's studying social work. Donnie Dawson says in the world of Vogue dancing, he's found the closest, most dependable people he knows. And that's why, to him, Lakaira is his mother.
Everything that I learned from her is broader and bigger than just me being gay. So that's why I don't go around and be like, gay mom. I call her mama because the knowledge that I get from her is way far beyond gay life.
Donnie's not only found family in the world of Vogue, but he's also found a way to relieve his stress. He says he feels like a target as a gay man walking down the street, and he is always on guard for confrontation. But through dance, Donnie says he can unwind. And as he says, let the creativity flow out of his veins. For Stateside, I'm Kyle Norris.
Now we're going to leave the dancers and head over to a film festival, specifically the Arab American Film Festival in Dearborn. We're going to hear from the guy who has to help pick which movies make the festival. And he says it's become increasingly politicized and controversial to pick different movies because of the Arab Spring, the Syrian uprising. He says every movie they pick sends a message, and they got to be careful about what they show. Devin Ackman is with the Arab American Museum, which puts on the festival. He sat down for Michigan Radio's program Stateside to talk with host Cynthia Canty.
It's grown in a lot of ways. Constantly, things are changing in the Arab world. The demographics of the Arab American community are expanding and changing. So the Arab Film Festival really seeks to portray some of those changes, both domestically and abroad, and to tell the story of the Arab American community as well, isn't just the Arab community.
It's a big agenda that you have
yes.
with that. Get into some of the changes in the evolution of the kinds of films and the messages that they've been bringing.
Well, certainly since the onset of the Arab Spring, we've seen a rise of what's being called the new Arab cinema. This is a very self-reflective movement of filmmaking. It's addressing social, political issues. And there's a lot of migration happening with the filmmakers between the Arab world, Europe, North America. So this is a great opportunity to reflect on these changes that are taking place, to identify a potential new future. Some of the films which we're screening this year actually show these changes taking place in a continuum. So it's not a fixed beginning and ending. This is an ongoing process, and these filmmakers are depicting this through their films.
And you've got films from many countries. Give us an idea of where these films have come from.
One of the things we try to do in curating a festival is to be mindful of our local Arab American community. So, of course, we're living in a region that has the highest concentration of Arabs in North America. The majority of the community is Lebanese, Syrian, Palestinian, Iraqi. So our first concern is finding films that would be of interest to these communities, to reflect these communities, and to bridge kind of the Arab and Arab American experience. So that is our first concern when seeking out films for this festival.
So what countries? Obviously, you've got Lebanon.
We have films from Lebanon, yeah. Palestine. We have obviously a film from Egypt and one from Morocco as well.
Which is very rarely seen, isn't it? The Moroccan films don't usually get to see the light of day in the United States.
True. And there's a very, very vibrant film community coming out of Morocco right now.
When you talk about bridging the experience between the Arab world and the Arab American world, what are some of the difficult challenges in sharing those experiences?
Yeah, one of the more difficult challenges is to be first and foremost mindful of the diversity of the Arab American community. As I mentioned, we come from 22 different countries. We're a Christian. We're a Muslim. Our time of immigration is different. Our political views are different. Our religious views are different. So, you know, if something is ongoing, for example, with what's happening in Syria, you know, you have to be mindful of the potential political wedge you could actually create by presenting or showing a particular form of art or a film. So being very careful to be respectful and not to be a wedge, but to be a source of information that could actually bridge people and to minimize some of the confusion.
Now, certainly, as you referred to, the Arab Spring uprisings have had a major, major impact on the films that are being made by Arab filmmakers. And a very good example of this is a film that is going to be screened at the 2013 Arab Film Festival. So, Devin, tell us a little about Half Revolution.
Well, Half Revolution is by two directors. It was co-directed by Omar Shagawi and Kareem El Hakim. Kareem El Hakim is actually an Egyptian American. Both of them were in Cairo 2 years ago when the Arab Spring began in Tahrir Square. This is a film that, as the title suggests, is about this ongoing process. It doesn't say that there's a beginning or an end to what's happening in Egypt. And it's shot from the perspective of the filmmakers and their friends. So they're actually the cast. They're in front of the camera. They're behind the camera. And it's not in the same sense as some of the other films that are coming out, more of a documentaries based on traditional reporting. This is very much the experience of these individuals and the changes that took place in those days following the beginning of the January 25 revolution.
So let's listen to a brief clip from Half Revolution and get a sense of what this film is about.
This is what we've been dreaming of our whole life, mate. One day there's going to be an Arabic revolution and we're going to take back the power to the people.
So what's the power of this film? I know it's very much tied into such a major, major world event.
I think part of the power is just transformation and opportunity and hope. You know, these are themes that are being celebrated around the world. It's themes that are being celebrated by our own president in the inaugurational speech. So this opportunity, this maybe uncertainty about the future, but a sense that there is a new future coming, a cautious optimism, and perhaps a time of new hope and renewal.
Devin Ackman, tell me, what are the films you're most excited about?
I'm personally very excited about the feature on the very first night. So as you can mm-hmm. see, our film festival is a combination of a short and a feature. We have four blocks. And the very first night is a film by an upcoming Arab-American filmmaker named Susan Yusuf. Susan was born and raised in New York. She's a Lebanese-Syrian by heritage. And her film, Habibi Rasak Karban, actually translates to Darling, Something is Wrong with Your Head, is a very, very, very interesting portrayal of a Palestinian experience. And it's portrayed through a 7th century Sufi parable called Majnun Layla, which is actually very much like the Western version of Romeo and Juliet. Hmm. So this is about these two students who are living in the West Bank, and they return to Gaza, and their opportunity and their hope for a love affair, despite all of these social and political constraints, and how they go about using graffiti to express their love throughout the city. So it's a take on a very traditional tale through the Arab perspective, and it's bringing in a lot of the social and political commentary of its time.
And it seems, especially since you say it's kind of a reflection of the Romeo and Juliet story, something that a non-Arabic audience member could relate to the story and then get that Arabic perspective put into it.
Certainly, and that's a great opportunity to portray the Palestinian story, the mm-hmm. Palestinian experience, without being overtly political. It's a love story. It's a very approachable, something that we can all connect to.
What other films are you personally really excited about?
Well, I'm very, very interested in Here, which is the short before Half Revolution. It's very much looking at this kind of combination of who's the oppressor, who is the innocent, the victim, the political system. So that's a film coming out of Jordan, and that'll be a really great combination of Here and then Half Revolution. And we're very, very pleased to have the university's very own Professor Juan Cole introducing those films that night.
And they all have English subtitles, correct?
Yes.
So they're accessible to everybody.
Yes, they're accessible.
So what would be your hope that a non-Arabic audience member, what's your hope that they might understand about the Arab world and the Arab-American world from these films?
Well, as you alluded to earlier, there's a certain sense of empathy, first and foremost, the ability to connect and say, hey, I understand that. That's something that's very similar to my family's history or something that I believe in. And we feel that the arts are a very powerful vehicle in that way to connect people. So first and foremost, we're hoping that people can identify with an aspect of these films and that'll resonate and they can walk away with a new understanding of the Arab and Arab-American experience.
Devin Ackman is one of the organizers of the 2013 Arab Film Festival. And the details on the festival are on the website of the Arab American Museum. And we have put a link to that up on our website at michiganradio.org. And once again, it opens Thursday and runs through Saturday at the Arab American Museum. Thanks for joining us today, Devin.
Thanks for having me.
Finally, we bring you a bunch of self-described suburban kids who write musical love letters to growing up in the 90s. The band is called Frontier Ruckus. And yes, they do look exactly like what you're picturing. Banjo, check. facial hair, double check. Are they any good? Well, Michigan Radio's Mercedes Mejia brought them into our studio east here to check them out.
Michigan-based Frontier Ruckus has a new CD coming out at the end of the month titled Eternity of Dimming.
August obliterates trust. It's in some dust I'm found. Home to swill the shrilly insect sound.
Matthew Milia is the singer-songwriter. He also plays the guitar. And Davy Jones is the banjo player. Matthew and Davy join me in the studio. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Our pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us.
So I read somewhere that your music is obsessively suburban, a nostalgic ode to coming of age in the 90s. Is that accurate, Davy? What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're all very much suburban kids, and it's kind of strange because I play banjo, so which is considered by many to be a rural instrument, but it's very, I mean, Matt's lyrics are just incredibly obsessively suburban.
Well, let's get to that, because you guys both grew up in Michigan, and it seems like your lyrics really reflect that. And why is that important to you?
I've just always been extremely sensitive to memory and my personal experience, and just memorizing my locality of pretty much the metropolitan Detroit area, to be specific. So I've always internalized this huge, sprawling system and try to find ways with language to reflect this crazy overload of experience. So that's why the songs are so dense, because there's so much that I'm trying to fit in there. And every line is a trigger that represents a very specific memory or image that I'm trying to at least unleash within myself cathartically. And I think this record is the apex of that kind of density. This record's 20 songs long. It's an hour and a half in duration. There's a lot going on. And I'm excited for people to kind of dig into it and take their time with it, because there's a lot to hear and find and discover.
There's a lot of very self-referential stuff in there, musically, lyrically. And
it connects with our previous albums, too. So it's all kind of a continuation, thematically speaking.
Okay. So give me an example of the kind of experiences you write about in this new album, Eternity of Dimming.
I mean, thematically, really, I mean, there's this kind of idyllic childhood being represented. Which is, I mean, that's why I'm so obsessed with memory, because there's a real pleasant kind of heavenliness about it. But that mingles with adult tragedy and the first punctuations of that world being compromised, realizing that there's this other side to growing up into existence that isn't as pleasant, but is equally necessary. So it's really a balance between those poles.
There's that line in Black Holes about Little Caesar's birthday nights, and then the next line is, our dads have seizures, isn't it?
Yeah. So it was a very deliberate kind of pairing of juxtaposing images right next to each other that are beautiful and then tragic. So,
yeah.
I mean, because that's the balance that I was really trying to portray.
Part of growing up.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
So Jack.
So many artists choose to move away to places like New York or L.A. Why have you guys decided to stay in Michigan? Davy?
For me, it would be heartbreaking to leave Michigan. I mean, when I think about it, like, I know Matt and I are very obsessed with the geography and the landscape of Metro Detroit, and just our overwhelming nostalgia and love for just being here and even just driving around from one. I mean, Matt kind of introduced me to this idea when I was younger that, like, all this connects in this, like, very strange way, and it's really kind of beautiful. Like, the streets of Detroit connect in some way to the streets of Rochester Hills or West Bloomfield. And it would be hard to lose that, I feel like. And I don't feel any real connection to New York City or Chicago. I love those places. I loved being there, but...
Well, let's talk about friendship. You guys have been friends for a long time, childhood friends, and other band members for a really long time. What keeps you guys together?
A strange brotherly love. We were...
We just lucked out in the way that we all... Our chemistries all just kind of mingle.
And Matt and I met in high school. We went to Brother Rice High School, which was an all-boys Catholic school. I think we at one point discovered that we both played instruments, and there was like this weird, funny kind of competition between the two of us for...
A rivalry. Very,
yeah.
Which still in some vestiges exists today, but in a very...
Very lovingly.
I would never have become the writer I would have without Dave as my counterpart. He provided me the confidence. It's a very Simon and Garfunkel-esque kind of situation where every time I would write something, I had no idea if it was any good. And early on, very often, it wasn't very good. But Dave always encouraged me. And then eventually Dave was like, that is really good, and you should keep writing songs like that.
Yeah.
It was a completely symbiotic relationship.
I think I'm probably Matt's biggest fan.
Well, that helps when you're in the band, too.
And I'm Dave's biggest fan.
Oh, thanks.
And this is where we kiss.
Okay, we'll save that one for later. What do you hope a person listening now will understand about you guys and your music?
I hope they dig or pick up on a certain idiosyncratic quality. I mean, we've taken a lot of time and worked really hard to develop a particular sound and vibe and ethos. So, and it requires some patience. I mean, very admittedly, our songs aren't the most accessible verbally and lengthwise. You know, they're not 2-minute long pop songs with recurring choruses that people can latch on immediately to. But we've been constantly affirmed and encouraged by the fact that the people that do take the time to dig in and listen seem to find themselves being rewarded several times over in ways that kind of exceeds the simple pop song. There's a lot to discover and just take some patience. And we're so fortunate that people have increasingly been taking the time and entering our world.
Michigan-based Frontier Ruckus has a new CD coming out this month titled Eternity of Dimming. We've put a link to their website at michiganradio.org. You can also see the band performing right here in our studio. Search for Songs from Studio East. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you so much.
Heart hoping I can open
Okay, that's all from ArtPod today, but you know that you can check out so many more stories about music, movies, bands, anything in between at our website, michiganradio.org. Just click on Arts. And while you're there, let us know what you think about ArtPod, our arts coverage, what we should be covering, what we should know about. You can click on Share Your Story on that website. So keep in touch, and thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Kate Wells for Michigan Radio News.
Support for arts and cultural reporting on Michigan Radio comes in part from a grant from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs and the National Endowment for the Arts.